It is May 3rd, 2017. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 641 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports Nerd. I am the aforementioned Will Leach. I think you're spending part of your day with me. Oh, it's been way, way too long. It's my fault entirely since we got back to our regular shows with the wonderful Allison Futter. Allison, how are you? I say this too often to you, but I've missed you.
I missed you too. You don't call, you don't write. I wonder what happened to you. And then all of a sudden, there you are again. So
I'm sorry. I had to talk to Ann Keel, Allison. There was no way. I got a Rick Ann Keel podcast. And after that, I just like walked around in a dazed stupor for like a couple of weeks. So,
oh my goodness. Cut the cord.
I know. I'm sorry. I don't know if people listen to that podcast. It was kind of funny how the first 10 minutes is basically, it was basically the Chris Farley show. It was a, remember that time? That awesome thing? That was awesome. And he's like, great, so how scared of you should I be? Exactly. How scared should I be? And apparently the answer is, very scared, Rick Ankiel. You should be very scared of me.
Anyway, he's such a nice guy.
He's such a nice guy. So obviously he did a podcast with a stalker. So yes, he is a very, very nice man. So Allison, first off, how are you? What's up? Tell me what's going on. You were at a fun game last night. You saw some fisticuffs and some ballywicks, some fisticuffs.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing, you know, no punches were exchanged, but the Astros and the Rangers have taken more steps, more positive steps toward being an actual rival. So it's fun. And, you know, I think that we're seeing, not that the Rangers are really good right now, but we are seeing a time where the Astros and Rangers are actually like contenders at the same time. So that's always super fun. So it got a little testy last night. It started with possibly there's a philosophy that Alex Bregman's really stupid tweet. I shouldn't say stupid, kind of ill-advised, immature tweet that he sent out the day before the series start, which was like hashtag, and then the initials for beat the something out of the Rangers. And he called it Operation hashtag B whatever. And so, but he spelled Operation wrong. So that was like, so he has two P's in Operation. So that started off the whole day. And the Rangers kind of used that as, I don't know what you use that as. Most of them just kind of rolled their eyes at it and said it was a little silly. So then, two Astros get hit by Andrew Cashner. I think probably more because Andrew Cashner just isn't that good of a pitcher, but who knows. Mike Napoli hit a home run to center, the deepest part of center field that normally would be an out on the hill. But now that that's gone, it was landed in the Budweiser patio seat. So that was fun. And then later on in the game, Lance McCullers, 23 years old, with all the bravado of a, stud 23-year-old, threw behind Napoli in that gray area, well below his head, but well above his butt. And in that, Napoli kind of snapped a little bit, got a little upset. The bench is cleared. And then order is restored. And so now everyone after the game was kind of like, yeah, we play 18 more times. This is what's fun about a rivalry. And Mike Napoli was like really cool about it. And he was saying, look, this is part of the game. I understand it. I've been in this game a long time. This comes along with it. Two of their guys got hit. I knew, just put it in my hip. Just hit me on my hip. And then I'll go down to first base. But, his issue is obviously that it was upward of his body. So, there's 18 more games between these teams this season. So let's all strap on our seatbelts and watch what happens.
Yeah, that is that is always fun. It's funny because, of course, we went through this with Boston and Baltimore. We're still going through the Boston and Baltimore, separate than the other issue that we're going to talk about today. But it is – I wrote about this with the Pedroia thing with Boston. The whole thing just – like when Pedroia is literally yelling, don't throw at them. I'm not mad. Don't protect me. I'm not angry. I don't know. I guess you are around athletes more than I am. So do you like this? Is I have kind of a hard time coming up with an explanation for this. That's anything other than just meatheadedness. Am I missing something? Is there some sort of quote unquote warrior's code that I'm just me being a wimpy simpleton outsider can never understand?
No, I mean, I look at it and I just laugh at these people because they're just making fools out of themselves. I remember a couple of years ago when there was sort of a fracas between the two teams, and Jeff Bannister and AJ Hinch started jawing at each other and kind of had to be held back a little bit. And I mean, it just makes me laugh because they're also in like throwback uniforms, so it just looked even sillier because Astros were in like their rainbow jerseys.
Right.
I don't know, it just looks so funny. But yeah, I mean. You watch things and the fans get fired up and you become cynical, of course, when you've been in this industry long enough. And I just watch it and I laugh because nothing's going to get accomplished and no one's going to get hurt. There's and I was tweeting this last night, and it's something that was pointed out to me like 15 years ago. But when you see a player that goes after another player and loses his mind, it's normally after a coach has already got him in a stronghold and is not going to let him move toward somebody. So, you'll see a player and he's yelling at the opposing player and he's screaming and they're jawing at each other. And all of a sudden, a coach like will, put his arms around his arms so he can't go, and then he lunges at the player, trying to really, punch him all of a sudden. And it rarely happens that a guy just sort of, on a free for all, does it on his own. And that's the thing that I think is the funniest. And last night, Shin Soo Chu was the one that, like, all of a sudden, I'm like, what is he so mad about? Because it was really between Napoli and then Brian McCann. They've known each other a long time. They're cool with each other. They were kind of going, they were kind of jawing back and forth. And all of a sudden, Chu is like bursts out and he's just screaming. I'm like, okay, everybody calm down here.
Well, and this is too, like the Baltimore Boston thing, this is a division rivalry. These are two teams that theoretically, the standings might not show it right now, but theoretically are going to be battling each other for the division title. And they see each other so that often. It does kind of raise it a little bit. And it raises the intensity of the atmosphere. And maybe that's a good segue into our second topic, which is Adam Jones. I don't think the connection in like throwing it, guys, but I do think the level of intensity I think you've seen for the Red Sox Orioles series, frankly, seems a lot higher than we've seen for the Red Sox Yankee series over the last couple of years. Which
Yes.
I know a lot of Red Sox fans have said that as well, that the Orioles feel like their real rival, even though the Yankees are going to like sneakily pass them both in the standings if they're not careful. But what we saw, Adam Jones. Talking about how he was called, racial epithets were hurled at him, peanuts were literally hurled at him, and there's been quite a blowback to this morning. There is a certain familiarity to some of it in that, as with everything in our modern discourse, it's all provincialism. It is. We're not like this. Yes, you are. This place is bad. No, we're not. Everything's bad. No, it's just you. And to me, one of the many frustrating things about this, I wrote a column this about Sports on Earth, is listen, I'm not going to defend Boston. Boston's got all that kind of stuff's got to answer for, just like St. Louis does, just like every city in the country does. But I do think a lot of this, you can argue, is concentrated in that place. But remember, I found there's a tweet that Adam Jones sent out 4 years ago where he said that he was playing the outfield and someone threw a banana at him. And he called him a slap dick, which I thought was funny. Jones called him a slap dick. The guy didn't call him. He's like, "Hey, to the slap dick that threw a banana." And I think slap dick is an excellent kind of athlete insult. But he had mentioned how he had a banana thrown at him. That was in San Francisco. So for me, the takeaway from that is not just Boston needs to get its act together, because it does. But really, this type of stuff, I've been at a Wrigley Field. I've been at Wrigley Field where there's a sign that says "Pujols mows my lawn." I have been at I've been at stadiums all across the country. You see this in so many different places around the country. And well, my question to you, because we saw Boston take a very strong stance in a way that frankly, the Red Sox released a very strong statement. Major League Baseball released a very strong statement. There's an investigation going on, which I think is better than what we've seen sometimes in the past in this. I've argued, talked about in the past, how at Busch Stadium, there have been incidents outside there, and I felt the Cardinals were very slow to react to that in a way that I think it would have been better for them to do so. But here's my question to you, Allison. Do you think that this isn't like this obviously happens on the planet. Like they've shut down whole soccer leagues over this. But do you think, you've heard a lot of arguments, I can't figure out which way I stand on this, a lot of arguments that this is something that baseball has more of a problem of than, say, basketball or football? Or do you think this is a general sports problem that baseball is just the next to kind of have this issue with?
Yeah, no, I think that these are isolated incidents that, no, I don't think that's more of a problem or less of a problem. There are racists everywhere, in the stands. That's just kind of how it is. I mean, maybe there are fewer of them, like in the NBA. because the fan bases are different demographics than in baseball. Baseball knows it has an issue with that, not only on the field where they're lacking, but also in the fan bases that are not expansive enough. So yeah, the problem is that, I mean, of course, it happens in Boston, and Boston has a long, you know, history, reputation, whatever you want to call it.
Howard Bryant wrote literally a whole book about racism in the Red Sox. So it's hard for me to argue, to hear any arguments about, like, the Red Sox aren't more racist than the other team. I'm not saying the players are or the owners are, but Boston clearly has a documented history of this.
Right. Yes, there are issues there. So when it happens in Boston, and then it becomes like a thing like, oh, well, it's Boston. Of course it happened there. When, you know, there's 38,000 people there and there's like one person that did that. And I'm not excusing, I'm not saying that, you know, the other 7,999 people wouldn't have felt that way too. I mean, they're dispersed all over the place, people that have these narrow-minded idiot ways about them. But like you said, I mean, something happened in San Francisco, and like, there's really not possibly a more, you know, liberal place in baseball than San Francisco. So, you know, I hate for everybody to get, you know, thrown on the carpet for the ill-advised actions of one person. But that, I mean, it's just disgusting. It's disgusting that it ever happens anywhere. But I don't think that you can delve too much further into that by saying, you know, like, by assuming that, you know, 50% of the people in the stands would have agreed with this guy, or, you know, that it happens more there than it is other places. It's just, these are, you know, like, I was watching MLB Network today, and Cliff Floyd was saying, I've heard everything from the people in the stands all over the place. You just play through it. I love Adam Jones. I love what he represents. I love how he presents himself. He does not back down when there's a controversy like this. And he speaks his mind on a lot of social issues. And he's an extremely bright guy. Sorry it happened to him, but I'm glad that he stands up and is like, no, I don't think this is okay. And here's why. And I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, and you know, it's worth it. You know, to me, one of the things I noted in my piece as well, like Adam Jones is awesome. Like, Adam Jones is, like, he is, to me, he, regardless of his race, of course his race matters, and we'll get to that in a second, but like, this is what, like, we love baseball players like Adam Jones. He plays the same place for a really long time. He plays so hard. He was Captain America on the World Baseball Classic winning team. He is really, in almost every way, all that baseball represents and all that baseball wants to be. So then when you see this, and you see this happening to him, not just here, but at other places. Dontrelle Willis was on Twitter today saying, hey, try warming up in the bullpen sometime, where like the fans are right over you, which I think is an excellent point to kind of throw in there. I find it difficult not to, listen, I don't know if you noticed about me, Allison, I really love baseball. I really love watching baseball. No. It's something I very love. It's something I am protective of and very mindful of, and I care about it very deeply. It still strikes me, and this is obviously something baseball has been trying to address, but it still strikes me that USA Today, because they're the ones that broke this story, Bob Nightingale broke this story with the interview with Adam Jones after the game. They mentioned in their story, there are 67 African-American baseball players in the major leagues. 67. So I did the math on this. The most recent study, 69% of the 69.6% of the players in the NFL are African-American, which with a 53-man team means there are literally more black athletes on the Detroit Lions and the Jacksonville Jaguars combined than in all of Major League Baseball. Like, that is awful. That is awful. And more to the point, that it to me, to argue that that is not a factor in this, and because what that says about the fan base and the demographics of the fan base, more to the point, the age of the fan base, not just of the race of the fan base, but I think the age of the fan base, I think it's something that, I'm not saying that baseball is not trying to address it, because I think it's clearly something that they're aware of. But one of the things I wrote about in my piece is, this is something that, I feel like when something like this happens, everyone says, someone should do something. Someone should just do something. Boston, the Red Sox need to get on top of this. Major League Baseball needs to get on top of this. But for me, listen, Allison, I sit in the stands. You spend more time in the press box. Maybe, you know, you sit in the stands. We hear this shit all the time. like in one way or another, maybe it's not always as overt as a racial slur. But we hear it. You hear it. You can't not hear it. Whether it's about an African American player, whether it's about a Latino player, whether it's about an Asian player. For crying out loud, the number of times that I have heard puns on Colton Wong's last name from St. Louis Cardinals fans it's everywhere. And that's less insidious than the racial slur thrown at Adam Jones. But it's of the same field. It's of the same kind of thing. And so for me, one of the things I tried to argue in my piece is that we can't, like, I hate this kind of Twitter reaction of just saying, well, they should do something. This is terrible. This is terrible. Like, we can do something. Like, we are at games. We can do something. When this happens in our sections, we need to not sit idly by or say, yeah. Oh, or feel uncomfortable or maybe quietly move or just hope they'll settle down. Because we've all seen this in stadiums. Again, maybe it's not as awful as explicitly awful as you saw as Adam Jones. But listen, there were people around these people that were saying it that heard them. I'm sure they did. What did they do? We would know nothing about this if Adam Jones had not said something.
Right.
So for me, I feel like we need to be more active in this as fans and as observers.
Well, that's the thing. Okay, so if I'm standing next to that guy and this is happening, not only am I absolutely 100% going to be speaking to an authority of some kind at the stadium and reporting this. My phone is out and I'm taking pictures of this guy. There's no way, you know, because I would feel totally safe in doing that. I mean, you know, sometimes you see like these people that are randomly watching, you know, a man get shot by police and they're recording the whole thing. And like, to me, like that scares me because to be that close to it, I'm fearful of being that near that kind of stuff. When you see this and you're in a stadium with all these people around you, I mean, there is absolutely a 0% chance that I would not do anything about that. I would 100% make sure that they knew that this was the specific person who did that. So yeah, shame on so many people in this. To sit there and go, well, baseball needs to do something. I mean, what do you want the commissioner to do when a random guy, an idiot, a jerk at a baseball game yells a racial slur toward a baseball player and throws something at him? I mean, what is he supposed to do? Like, move, like right now, what would you like him to do about that thing that happened last night? You know, they put out the statement and they are zero tolerance on this. What are we supposed to do here? What's he supposed to do?
Yeah, and frankly, I think a lot of this, not to bring everything back to social media, but listen, I've appreciated the anger today. It's been, we're taping this on Tuesday, this will go up on Wednesday. So the anger yesterday, listeners, but certainly I've appreciated the anger that people have had, and I understand it, I feel it too. But it does feel like in 3 days, we'll move on to another thing. The same way that 4 years ago, when, like, it's one thing. It's like what happened last time was awful. 4 years ago, someone literally threw a fucking banana at Adam Jones. Like, that literally happened. Did you know that story? Did you remember that story?
I do not remember that story.
We didn't blow up about it. We moved on with our lives. And for me, a lot of this is not – the reason that we're even having this conversation is because Adam Jones actually stepped and said something. He said, I've gotten this before, and you heard this with Cliff Floyd, you heard this with Don Cho Willis. Like, it's a regular part of their lives. That's why it's very frustrating to hear a lot of people. I won't call anyone out in particular, Albert Breer. But the idea that someone, if a white person has not personally seen racism, it's not actually happened. And for me, and I think that's really frustrating. And I think it shows how much weight you have to put on Adam Jones for him to be the one to even call this out. And even there, for the record, Adam Jones, like, this is now, I'm just supposed to be a baseball player. He just wants to play baseball like any normal person does. And he's going to carry this around with him all the time now and is willing to take that burden. So for me, you know, one of the things I wrote about in the piece is the idea that in soccer, they have a behind closed doors policy. That if there's an incident where this happens two or three times, I don't know what the number of times they do, but FIFA will literally play a game with no fans. There are no fans allowed. It's like that weird Orioles game from last year, except as literally a punishment for the fans. Now, again, it's hard to imagine that happening, but it's also hard to imagine a soccer game happening like that. And for me, you know, there's always this discussion of who's to blame, who's to blame, who's to blame. But to me, to see their statements today, that's a start. But to me, it's a channeling of that frustration and not letting that frustration and anger that people have at this instance fade into, okay, on to the next thing, as often happens with this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. At the same time, it's an isolated incident that happened and it gets talked about a lot and everyone is aware that it's the wrong thing to do. And And then you do move on from it because everything is, you move on from everything. I mean, look what is happening in our country. People are still moving on, you know, with their day-to-day lives. It's the way of life. I mean, I don't know. It's, you know, what are you going to do? Like, you're going to go on the streets of Boston and round up 75 people, go to sensitivity training. You know, you're going to go out on Yawkey Way and be like, okay, 25 people, let's go. And, you know, we're going to give you some classes on sensitivity. I mean, this, you know, I just don't know where you can go from this, because if it's, you know, if they're having, it was a person. It was one person.
Maybe it was one person, but like, you know, I mean,
or three people, but no, yeah. It was, and it's wrong and it's terrible. I'm not excusing it, but like, you know, at the same time, I mean, it's what we should be focused on is the fact that Adam Jones brought it to light, let us all know it was happening. And that to me is a very admirable thing that he did.
I just think it's worth keeping in mind, and we'll close with this on this. I think it's worth keeping in mind that it did not go without notice that the number of African American players after he said that said, oh yeah, this happens all the time. Like literally all the time.
Yeah, that's true. No, you're right.
I think that's worth keeping in mind. I have to admit, just, you know, I mean, I don't know. I do think it's unfair. To close this part, I promise. I never liked the idea. I've seen this from the St. Louis side. I'm not seeing it from the Boston side. The idea that people love to say, oh, well, look at all the racists that there are in Boston. Look at all the racists are in St. Louis. Here in place wherever I'm standing, we're fine. They're the bad guys. They're the problem. And for me, that it shows a lack of self-awareness. We'll put it that way.
Oh, for sure. I'm probably stepping into territory I don't want to right now. But, you know, we could... I was asking somebody yesterday just about Alex Bregman's tweet, and it's like, you know, this probably isn't going anywhere. You know, he's not going to be judged as harshly as if it's like Jose Bautista, you know? I mean, he's just not. Like, Alex Bregman is a 22-year-old, you know, guy from LSU who's a nice little white kid. And that, you know, and it just becomes much more explosive if it's somebody, you know, of a different, just somebody else. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay. So we have not actually talked about the baseball season yet at all with you. You want to get back to our regular shows now. So we should probably talk about, to me, the big take, let's talk about the three teams that I think are most thought of as the most surprising so far and whether you think they're going to keep it up. So I'm going to toss the three names to you and let me know which of these three teams that are off to surprising starts are the ones that are most likely to be where they are at the end of the season. Those two teams are, first, the Baltimore Orioles, the aforementioned Baltimore Orioles. They are off to a 16-8 start. I don't know what they did on Tuesday night, but a 16-8 start and in first place above both the Yankees and Boston. Second are two NL West teams, the Colorado Rockies and Arizona Diamondbacks, both of which were thought to be toward the bottom of the division, and certainly no match for the Dodgers or even the Giants. They are both in first place. Now, some of us, I'm not going to name any names, me, picked the Rockies to make the playoffs this year, but they're not doing it at all in the way that I thought they would, so I don't get to take any credit for it at all. But of those three teams, Colorado, Arizona, and Baltimore, that are off to excellent starts, which one do you think is most likely to still be in playoff contention at the end of the season?
So when you say playoff contention, then I say the Orioles, because I mean, I don't think that they're going to win the division, but I do think that they're going to absolutely.
They'll be until the end. They're not an April fluke.
No.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. And
I don't think that the Rockies are a fluke either, though. I mean, I don't believe that the Diamondbacks are going to be anywhere close to the playoffs, right. But I think that the Rockies are absolutely going to be in the hunt for one of the wild card spots.
Okay, that's gold for me. That will make me look totally smart. Not that anyone will remember. For me, what's funny about Colorado is a lot of the things that you thought were going to work for them have actually not been great. Like, John Gray's not been this great starting pitcher. Their bullpen's been a little shaky, but they're still, and their offense is not really like quite blowing away the way you might thought. But they're just winning games, you know. And it's funny, you heard a lot of people talk about how good of a manager Bud Black would be for that team, and you do kind of sense they feel like an actual major league team right now. And the Rockies, when they're at their worst, even when they're putting up good numbers, they always just kind of feel mildly chaotic. And they don't feel that way right now. I think that's got to be exciting for Colorado. Even if they're only 6 games over 500, we're obviously way too early. But for me, I would love to see, of those two teams, I would probably rank them in the same order as you. I think Baltimore, what's funny about the AL East is Baltimore, Boston, and the Yankees all look really good. Like they all look really good. That looks like a potentially fun race. And the Yankees, to me, I mean, the Yankees are such a surprise for kind of what they're. I didn't include them because of the Yankees, but certainly when you look at what they have pulled off so far, Sabathia's pitching well, Pineda's pitching well, and obviously what Aaron Judge is doing. I was all three of those lousy Cardinal Yankee sweeps at Yankee Stadium, and the Yankees did not look like a rebuilding team to me, even without Gary Sanchez. They look pretty awesome.
They do look pretty awesome. And I
Sharks.
think that, I mean, I think it's the toughest division in baseball. I don't think that there's anything that even comes close to what the AL East is. It's funny because it was such a foregone conclusion that it was going to be Boston winning that division. And not that you can judge, so to speak, much on April, but I don't know. I mean, they don't look that good. And there's a lot to like about the Yankees. And it might just come down to who has the fewer players on the disabled list, really.
Yes. The perpetual 10-day disabled list.
Right.
I have a hard time getting adjusted to the new world of the 10-day
Hey,
disabled list.
if Michael Pineda actually has a great season, then I don't think there's any doubt that the Yankees will win that division.
Wow, that's all. Wow, that'd be amazing. Well, good for them. Good for them. It's nice to see the scrappy Rugrats of baseball get a chance
I
every once
know
in a
those poor
while.
Yankees. It's been a rough couple of years for
It
them.
really has. Okay, so that brings us to the surprisingly bad teams. I think there are three clear. You could maybe include Kansas City in this. I don't think Kansas City is going to be that great anyway. But to me, the three teams off to very terrible starts that everyone is very concerned. They are the New York Mets, whose record is not actually as horrible as some other teams, but certainly everything else surrounding them seems to be troublesome. The Mets, the San Francisco Giants, and the Toronto Blue Jays. Of those three teams, tell me the one that you think is most toast. And the one that is done that we should, if you think any of them are done, that is out, and then if there's one that can rebound and get it back together.
I would say that the Giants could possibly be a disaster this year. It's really hard to pick because I really think that a lot of these, I think that they all can rebound, but if I had to pick one, I think that the Giants have the best chance to not do much. I know that their division is not good, but yeah, I think just like losing Madison Bumgarner for half the season at least is just going to be too much of a blow to them. And I believe that the Mets have the best chance to get it together, even though they're going to be out without their ace. And I'm making a slight comparison to the 2005 Astros, not because I think that the Mets are going to win the pennant, because I don't. But with the Astros when they started 15-30, I mean there were so many things that went wrong, and they still had all stars and future Hall of Famers at almost every position, and it was just everything that could have gone wrong. They were getting completely blown out of games. They didn't win their second road game until the third week in May. I mean, it was terrible. And they got it together because they had a lot of talent on the team. And I really see the Mets as a very, very talented team that I don't think that you're gonna, I don't, I just don't think this is gonna be what we're gonna see the whole season. I just think they're gonna get better.
I to me the one thing that looks toast there, I don't see how Toronto pulls this out. With they already were in trouble. Donaldson's still out for a while. The rotation looks rough. They're putting out some lineups at Busch Stadium in St. Louis where like Chris Coughlin was batting fourth and Devin Travis was there third. Like, it was all sorts of ugliness there. I think I saw a thing where Toronto, even if you think they're gonna get back in the playoffs for the playoff chase, for them to even get back to the what it took to really win a wild card last year, they'd have to be at like a 97 win pace the rest of the way. So that's the thing about April. You can't really win a lot in April, but your season can fall apart if you're not. Yeah, like if you think the Blue Jays, even if you think the Blue Jays are better than they are now, and they might be a little better than they are now, they don't look to me like a team that's a 97 win team, and that's
No.
kind of what they're going to have to be moving forward.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like I like their pitching enough that I think that they could possibly salvage a season. I do not believe that they will be contending in that division, but I think that they could be, salvage something and maybe, finish close to 500. I don't see them as just becoming completely irrelevant, where I can see the Giants just completely. I mean, Matt Cain being Matt Cain and Madison Bumgarner being out. I can see that just completely imploding.
Yeah, and that's an older team anyway. Like, I think that's kind of like it's funny. We haven't really thought of, we always think of like the Tigers that way or the Blue Jays that way. But the Giants, when you kind of take a step back from it, they're a team that doesn't have a lot of young guys coming up. And they've really just kind of been spackling with veterans any kind of holes. But if it starts to turn the wrong way, and then like it kind of is now, you're like, wait, so do they need to start over? Because there's not, they don't have a great farm system. They've got a lot of money wrapped up in guys. All of a sudden, you take a step back. And it's funny, you think about 2014. When they, of course, won the World Series, and sorry, 2000, I guess 2014 when they won the World Series, that team was not great. That team just got hot in the playoffs. If you really look at the last really, really good Giants team was 2012, and since then they've just gotten older. We missed it because they got that 2014 World Series that made us think they were just okay on. They kept snuck in the playoffs last year, but I don't know, man. I kind of agree with you. I think the Giants could be in serious trouble.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Hunter Pence. It's like, you know, it's hard for me to imagine that he's like an older player. He's 33, and he's had a lot of injuries over the last couple of years. I'm like, wow, Hunter Pence is not so young anymore. And then you can go on down to, you know, just a lot of those guys, and you know, what makes you really good 3 years ago and winning World Series. You put the same cast of characters, and there's issues, and they're seeing those right now.
It is catching up to all of us, Allison. Not you, but me and the rest of society. The rest of us are all getting older. You are saying the perfect age that you are.
Actually, Hunter Pence is 34. I think he
34?
turned four. Yeah, just turned. So, yeah.
It's
Oh,
fine.
Father Time.
Seriously, undefeated Father Time. All right, Allison, thank you as always. We will get back on a regular schedule. If that's okay with you, I'd love to get back on a regular schedule now, if you will have me.
Yes, please.
Unless St. Keel, of course, decide if he answers any of my texts. Saying, come on tomorrow. We come on the show tomorrow. We come on the show tomorrow. How about tomorrow? We come on the show tomorrow. If he, if Zazie, unless he answers one of those with anything other than I'm calling the police right now, we will get back on the regular schedule. So, Allison,
Perfect.
it'll happen. It'll happen. All right, Allison, well, thank you. It's great talking to you again, as always. Make sure to follow Allison on Twitter, AlysonFootER. And Allison, thank you. Great show.
Okay, thank you.
Of course, this is music. This is the Willie's Experience podcast. Music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back almost certainly with Allison next week. Enjoy.